Hi, and welcome to Book Talk. I'm Sasha DeBoyle, and today we're going to be talking about the latest work of fiction from Scottish writer Andrew O'Hagan. The Illuminations tells two stories, the first of Anne Quirk, a once great photographer, trying to reconnect with her past, and the second of her grandson Luke, serving in the British Army in Afghanistan. Helping us to dissect today's book are journalist and chair of the Green Carnation Literary Prize, Kate Welsh, and books editor at The List, Yasmin Suleiman. First impressions, what did you think of the book?
I absolutely loved it. I hadn't actually read any Andrew O'Hagan before, but I really want to. It wasn't remotely what I was expecting in terms of what I'd heard about it, but I thought it was a really enjoyable and quite beautiful read.
Yasmin?
I didn't love it, but I did like it. I think you're right, it was a beautiful read. I do agree with that. The prose is really lyrical. It's just, it's quite kind of, I don't want to say gentle, but I mean, it's not a gentle story, but it was just really easy to get into and a really nice book to read. But I did have a lot of reservations about the story and how the story came together. Like, I think he writes beautifully, but I don't think this story was for me.
I also had reservations about it. I found it quite hard to get into. I think because it was so lyrical, I just found it almost like a little affected. And so I was like, oh, this again.
It does.
Though the writing did have good moments for me that I did enjoy, for sure.
It does feel very deliberately stylized. I mean, I felt especially with Luke's narration, a lot of the time it felt like you were watching a video game. I mean, it was the way that was framed, it sort of referenced source materials like video games a lot. But for me, it almost felt self-parodying in this kind of really overt, jokey masculinity.
I think the video games thing does come up, though. He sort of addresses it in a way, doesn't he? Problem for me with those segments was that I didn't feel the dialogue was convincing. And I'm reluctant to say that because I've read that he, you know, he spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. So it's not like he doesn't know what that sort of situation is like. But I think overly stylized is a good way to put it. It was like, I almost felt like he was trying so hard to capture that voice authentically that it didn't feel natural enough.
Yeah, I agree. And my worry was actually in that parodying note, is that I thought that it sort of became a caricature. And then I was sort of concerned about what he was saying about that. And that very sort of, I am a separate voice talking about this issue and it is not my issue. And I'm coming here and characterising it and, you know, sort of making light of it in a way, because they're not exactly portrayed as, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that everyone should be portrayed as a, you know, gleaming war hero, but there could be nuances to it. And I felt that they were quite one-dimensional at times. But that leads quite well onto the sort of concept of the book as a whole, because I felt like the book spent a lot of time talking about old women and young men. And we sort of talked about the young men a little bit, but how did you feel about the women that were portrayed in the book, because they sort of make up the other half of the narrative?
I actually liked those segments better than the ones set in Afghanistan, or the ones just generally about Luke. I kind of felt, because it because the book opens with the sections about women, when he did get onto Luke, I was a bit confused about what the focus of the book was going to be. And I almost felt like he'd sort of started off, in the residential home, and then kind of maybe got more interested in Luke's story. And then that's what we ended up hearing more about. And I think, like, the voice of Anne, his grandmother, sort of suffers a bit because of that. I wanted to hear more from her, not just about her.
Yeah, I would agree, because I think that at the setup of the book, the way that Anne's thought process is presented was really interesting in the first couple of chapters, sections. I don't really know what to call them because they're sort of structured strangely. But her point of view, I liked that you were coming from her mind so that you could see, you know, to you as the reader, it made sense when sort of dementia took over and she was moving from time frame to time frame and starting to associate, you know, different people with the words that were just said and toying it back, so that when she said something, you know, strange to the person who was receiving that conversation, you as the reader were like, well, of course that makes sense. And it sort of gave you that picture into the mind, and I did like that. But then
she has this beautiful internal logic
that
is so
great.
Clear to her and to us, but that makes no sense to the characters around her.
But then that did sort of disappear as the book wore on, and I did think, I was like, I'm not hearing anything from her, and all I'm seeing is this, like, lovely old lady who had some things in the past and then some that bad things happened, and isn't that sad? And you only really hear, you're right, about her rather than from her. And even at the sort of end of the book and the tying up of everything, it's all sort of horribly pleasant. Isn't that nice? We went to Blackpool. And you're like, all right.
And it's weird because Blackpool really isn't pleasant. It's not a nice place. And I didn't feel like there was enough of that sort of grittiness about it.
Yeah,
it was just a bit... it didn't have the faded glamour that it actually does have in real life.
But even if you think about the title of the book, it's called The Illuminations, and that is in reference to the Blackpool Illuminations. And when I read, because first I saw the title and I went, ooh, that sounds a bit spooky. And then I heard about that and I went, oh, this is going to be cool. It's going to be bright. It's going to be shiny. It's going to be aggressive and exciting. You know, the things that I associate with Blackpool, having never been there. But reading the book, it's nothing like that. Like, it sort of made me think of being like very, very deep below the sea, with occasionally like creatures that glow floating out of the darkness. That's what it made me think of as a book. It was more like, you know, really, really slow with occasional lighter spots, rather than what you would think of when you think of Blackpool.
I mean, for me, the illuminations are Anne's flashes of memory and her kind of brief moments of almost lucidity.
I wish she'd made more of those moments of lucidity. I mean, definitely. There's been a couple of books that have been out recently that where you do hear from dementia sufferers. So books like Elizabeth is Missing and Still Alice, Etta and Otto and Russell and James that came out last month by Emma Hooper. And I have reservations about both of those books. I haven't seen Still Alice yet. In all of those cases, you actually hear about that person's experience from them. And I didn't feel like we had enough from Anne in this book. I wanted to learn more about her from her own perspective and not third hand.
Felt like we were just collecting information about her, you know, through her photographs in some way. But there was so much there that was such an interesting life lived, and it almost set up the book being like, this woman's life is of value and it is interesting and let's talk about it, and then didn't really talk about it.
Although the one person I did think in that segment that I really liked was Maureen.
I love Maureen as a voice.
I mean, I don't think I would like her if I met her, but as a character, I thought she was brilliant. Like, she was probably the most fully realised character in the whole book for me. And it's not really about her at all. No. Like, neither of the narratives are.
In a way, I liked the idea that Anne remains to an extent a cipher, even towards the end. In a way, it mirrors her photography a lot, in that what we see is brief glimpses of her life that are very stage managed.
In terms of the pacing of the book, actually, if you think about it, I mean, we don't really get any of that story, really, until the very, very end.
And I think that whilst Maureen is a fantastic character, she and Alice, Anne's daughter, have a little bit too much in common. Yeah. In a way, I felt like our choices are, you get to be, as a female character, you get to be the glamorous, not terribly maternal artist, or the frustrated, unfulfilled wife and mother.
Yeah, I had a big
That was the bit that really did not ring true for me. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think Maureen bothered me so much, actually.
She and Alice weren't both necessary.
They did seem very, very similar. And they were sort of painted as these, you know, pathetic characters that couldn't even really see beyond themselves to either the beauty of art or the atrocities of war. Like, neither of them seemed to fully understand either of those concepts, which had them really painted as sort of lesser beings in the context of the story. And they both felt very bad about that as well, but I didn't like that at all. Especially seeing as he was lauded in, I think it was a Guardian review, for being one of the few men who writes about women. And I was like, yeah, but look at the women he's written.
What is he writing?
Yeah. I did sort of think that at the beginning as well. I thought it's really nice that the book opens with two female characters, but it just didn't really play out for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole retirement home concept could have carried a book by itself.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so could Luke's story. I think that could have been a book by itself.
Yeah. I'm not sure that Luke's story, the way that he wrote it, could have been, because I think you need the deliberate, I mean, I think deliberate affectedness of it would have made it very wearing as a full book. I think you needed those very jarring shifts between the women's perspective and Luke's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there was a quote in the Guardian review I was just referring to, which I just wanted to put to the table and ask you what you thought of it, which was that the virtuosity of the novel and its riskiness is in the violent contrast between the world of women, families and art, and the world of war.
How is that risky? How is that not the basis for all post-1900 literature?
Well, that's sort of what I thought as well. And I was like, well, as well, you're sort of implying that there isn't any violence or grittiness or realness in the world of women and families.
Exactly. And that is, and the women have no place in the world of war, which
is... Yeah, as well. Exactly, and I just sort of sat there and went, what? What do you... Go away.
But also, I do think it's quite right to identify it as a world of women, families and art, because I think that...
Because art is separate.
Exactly, it's a separate thing in the book.
And I thought, actually, to me, it was more a book about high and low culture.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The privilege that it affords you, both in the domestic context and the war context, because in the domestic context, you have Anne, who's the artist, and she and Luke understand art and are of the intelligentsia to an extent and can talk about things. And then the other women resent that. And, you know, even Maureen resents her children for living in Edinburgh and being cultured. And then in the war, you have, you know, all of the soldiers who are all very, very young and speak in this very affected way, which is basically just, you know, talking about drugs and penises all the time and drinking, which is fine. But then you have, you know, the foil of like Major Scullion and Luke, who are, you know, the intellectuals, they are smart. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that, because it was really painting this picture of a hierarchy that I wasn't sure.
There's a very problematic class element that comes up particularly in the Afghanistan stuff. And I think in a way, both Scullion and Luke are almost undone by the fact that they have, quote unquote, access to these, to what they see, I think, as a deeper way of thinking. And in a way, that's kind of what destroys them, maybe.
And that's problematic,
I think. Hugely problematic.
Yeah, because then it sort of puts across the message that actually, you know, if you're intelligent, then you're too good or too gentle or too soft for the war.
Yeah.
And that what you really need is, you know, brutes.
Yeah, I've been hoping that some of the minor kind of Afghanistan characters would be more fleshed out.
Yeah.
I think he was very deliberately keeping them as background, as colouring, and very deliberately kind of creating this microcosm of a society.
I thought there was a really interesting point actually going back to the gamification element, where they're talking about the gamification of war, and how there's a quote where one of them says, you know, the CIA put money into gaming companies now, and Luke says, quote, nostalgically, they used to put money into brainy magazines, with a sigh. And I was like, oh. It's interesting that you can find a book so problematic and then still enjoy it as a whole, though.
Absolutely,
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I love it in no way alters the fact that I have serious problems with elements of it. But I think that's what kind of one of the reasons I enjoyed reading it. Mm. I mean, for me, the fascinating thing about the gamification is how it's almost taken for granted that that's how they think about it. Like, they're aware, rather than having clunky parallels of, oh gosh, they're doing this just like a video game, their reality and their gaming lives kind of blur a lot in a way that I think they're kind of aware of.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
There's one thing that we're always being told is how violent videos are, how they mimic war. And I think that's very well, the implications and the fallout of that are very well drawn.
I mean, Andrew O'Hagan comes from a background where he's written quite a lot of nonfiction. But I was wondering if either of you had, you know, been exposed to it before, and what you thought about the fact that he chose to write a fiction book about this, given the amount of research he did and given the amount of actual historical fact that sort of went into the book in terms of like events that he sort of took cues from for the narrative.
I think in a way, because he uses these very kind of broad brushstrokes for history, it doesn't feel like the kind of book that comes from somebody with a deep nonfiction background. Although you can see that he's done a great deal of research. The kind of intricacies aren't really explored there. So I kind of I haven't read any of his nonfiction, though I'd like to, but I can't picture what it must be like based on this book.
I haven't read any of his nonfiction either, but I want to actually after reading this book and after finding out how much research he did. I think I would probably have preferred to read a nonfiction book about the Afghanistan section, certainly.
Because in a way he does a lot of telling and not showing with the Afghanistan stuff. But what he tells us isn't massively illuminating.
The book actually opens with a quote from photographer Dorothea Lange. Photography takes an instant out of time, altering life by holding it still. I thought it was a good quote to preface the book with, because I really do feel that's sort of what the book does. It sort of takes specific moments in these very small sets and goes, this is a thing that happened, or this is a thing that is currently happening. Let's focus on this for just an instant. And I think the stylized writing and the sort of lyricism of it really lends itself to that, because it really slows the reader down and you just sort of have to process that one moment.
I think the way he talks about photography and the way he talks about Anne's photography in particular is sweet, nice to read about. But then I think that also feeds into the image of her as just being a like nice old lady that we hear about but we don't really hear from.
Yeah, I feel we get flashes of a much more interesting story for Anne. I mean, I think we could have more from Anne, certainly towards the end of the book. But I do love the interplay between Luke and Anne's story. Anne's work as an artist, as a photographer, could be plumbed in much more interesting depth.
I agree, yeah.
There's an interesting line fairly early on. I think one of the curators had written to Anne, describing her as a lost woman photographer. But I think the emphasis there is actually more on lost woman than photographer. I mean, she was sort of ahead of her time and not really of her time, and then falls out of time when she gets, as she gets older because of the dementia. She's kind of robbed of a place in history and she can't even write her own place anymore.
Yeah, maybe that's the point of the fact that we can only see her through different people's eyes, is that she has no ability to reclaim that place.
I mean, I think there's a lot of value in what he's doing with that, but it's frustrating because that's the kind of story that we hear much more rarely.
I guess because you're doing this interestingly, it's an interesting premise, it makes us stop and think about the frustrations of what if you were that person and you had no voice to tell that story, and that story is a story of value.
I did quite like the relationship between her and Luke, though. I thought you don't really hear about many relationships in literature between adult grandchildren and their grandparents.
Yeah,
and I thought it was quite nice that they were as close as they were. Mm-hmm. And that was one, but I mean, reading the reviews of the book, a word that comes up a lot is tender. And I think there is something tender about their relationship. I did read that there was maybe film interest in it. I'm not really sure if I think it would make a good film.
I don't think it would. I think it works much better on a kind of a broader stage level. There are kind of flashes of very specific detail for the plot, but in a way he's very, there's lots of kind of broad brushstrokes that I don't know if that would translate to film particularly.
I think in terms of traditional, like mainstream storytelling in cinema, it would make for an interesting story because, you know, you often get stories of old women and you often get stories of young men, but you don't often get the two together. So combining those, I mean, it could be an Oscar bonanza.
Provided they stopped it being too saccharine,
which
I think he does. I mean, at times he just stops short of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But I think the way that he tempers that is actually with some of the humour and the writing, because the writing can be quite sharp and to the point at times, even though he is very, you know, tender and sweet throughout, and, you know, often to the point where I didn't enjoy it. But there are bits that pulled it back that I really enjoyed, humorous moments generally with Maureen that made me laugh. My favourite line in the book is when her family come over for lunch and they're talking about things and she's just being like willfully obstinate about absolutely everything, and they bring up the Polish. And she goes, oh, coming here, taking our jobs, bringing their giant jars of vegetables.
Yeah, that was a great bit.
That was wonderful.
That really made me laugh. Because it wasn't like, I mean, there was, you know, there was the traditional old lady racist comment, which I didn't like. But then there was something that was slightly more observational and not really in any way offensive to anyone.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I mean, that's the thing, giant jars of vegetables.
Yeah. She finds up stuff. She finds the oddest things to be angry and offended about.
I really liked those bits with her and, you know, her children and her grandchildren. And in a way, I do prefer to keep reading a bit more about them than
I don't know
than
if
what
could have
got.
Stood Maureen for an entire book.
No, that's true. I mean, I certainly didn't like her, but I liked those sections.
Yeah. I was a little bit let down by the way he handled the actual kind of massacre when the mission in Afghanistan really goes to pot, because it felt so, there was no pickup of pace or tension. From the rest of that section, it felt.
I agree.
In lots of ways. It had kind of gradually gotten a bit, you could tell things were headed in a not great way, but it didn't escalate as sharply. And maybe that was deliberate. Maybe it was meant to be the banality of violence, but that doesn't read particularly well in this context.
Well, yeah, because it was almost over before it started. You turned around and then all of a sudden, you know, both with the ambush and the sort of final battle at Kajaki, it's over before it started, really. And you just turn around and you're like, what's happened? Who's died? And it was really confusing for that. But then I agree that it could potentially have been on purpose to make you stop and think and actually be like, this doesn't have a payoff like a Hollywood film. This doesn't have a payoff like a video game. There is no big battle scene. It's over in 15 seconds. Loads of people are dead and maimed and there's nothing you can do about it. And you don't get to sit there and mourn it in a way that I didn't
think
I would
be. I feel like the aftermath was quite affecting, but
quite grim, because like the last book that we did with a similar sort of theme was, we did The Narrow Road to the Deep North before Christmas, the Richard Flanagan book, and that was like an absolutely grueling account of, you know, time in a Burmese prison camp, and it was something that you did sort of become immune to, because you were like, it just never ends, this constant stream of abuse and violence and horribleness and, you know, degradation, and the situation was just really quite full on. So I was surprised reading this that I got to a point, because I was like, oh yeah, I can take this, I've read Richard Flanagan. And then I got to that scene and I was really like, I was like, oh, I feel really bad.
Yeah. And it's interesting that what we're dealing with in a lot of ways is a group of characters who are already numb to that point.
Yeah. So, and they're all affected by it.
Yeah.
And also proves that I am not a robot, which is, you know, always a good thing.
That's a relief.
I did quite like seeing them out of Afghanistan when Luke meets up with the two other soldiers in Blackpool. It was quite nice hearing them discuss things away from where we'd first met them and from, you know, after the horrible things that happened as well, and see how they sort of, how some of them can talk about it and some of them can't. And also Luke, by that point, has left the army. He doesn't have to go back, and the other two do. And hearing them talk about how they deal with that, or how they're going to, or not being able to talk about that, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. I feel like they became much more fully realised characters at that point.
So I guess a good last question to end on is, would you recommend this book to somebody else to have a read of?
Not everybody. I would recommend it to select people who wouldn't be overly frustrated with the, maybe with the lack of fulfilment.
I think the same. I would recommend it to people who I knew liked reading books that maybe don't have a resolution or have very poetic dialogue, but are kind of people who feel okay with not knowing everything at the end.
We like the journey.
Yes.
Well, that about wraps us up for today as usual, but the conversation doesn't have to end here. So if you out there listening on the internet have thoughts or comments about the Illuminations, you can let us know on our Book Talk webpage, on Twitter at ScottishBKTrust, or on our Facebook page as well. Please remember to tune in about 2 weeks' time when Ryan Van Winkle will be bringing you more exciting author interviews. So keep your ears peeled for that one. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about our guests, you can find them online. Kate, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter at Kate Welsh, which is spelt K-A-I-T-E, Welsh.
And with an E?
Yes, with an
Excellent.
E. Excellent. Or my website is www.katewelsh.com.
Fab. And Yasmin?
You can find me personally on Twitter at Yasmin, Y-A-S-M-I-N, underscore S-U-L. But I'm editor at The List Magazine, and you can follow us on Twitter as well at The List Magazine.
Fab. Thanks so much to our guests, Yasmin and Kate. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.